League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the WTF1 podcast, where we have finished Formula One testing and we are hurtling towards the first race of the season at Bahrain. And we just decided we're going to answer some of your Formula One testing questions. Of course, some of it's going to be speculation because we don't have all the answers as much as Tommy looks like he has all the answers. And that brings me beautifully into announcing. Kind of just saying who's on the podcast, but we're going to announce it. It's the WTF1 founder and probably one of the best looking men to wear a headset, Tom Bellingham, and Katie Fairman, the WTF1 editor, who doesn't like over the ear headphones anymore. She's on the iPod life.
I've opted for a different kind of setup today. We'll see if it's any better, but.
Go for the streamlined effect. You know, me and Tommy wouldn't be particularly aerodynamic in this particular setup. Anyway, we move on. Formula One testing is what we're going to talk about today. So let's get straight into it. Hi there, _F1 comes in with sandbagging or real struggle for Mercedes. We're going straight in with full speculation mode. Of course, we have made a video in the past, not that long ago, actually, where we said about Formula One times in testing don't really matter. However, there are things you can dissect, especially if you're riding on board with a certain car to really understand how a car is handling. And I assume that's what both of you guys are going to dive into as well. But from my side of things, it looked as if that Mercedes was a handful. Of course, you know, Toto Wolff came out and said he found the hair in the soup afterwards, which was I felt like it's a very British phrase. Isn't it that sort of thing?
I've never heard that in my life.
No.
No, I've never heard of it, but it sounds very British. Either way, I didn't expect Toto to come out with it either way. But yeah, they apparently found the problem with the car after testing, because clearly there were some issues that the Mercedes wasn't dialed in. Hamilton himself lost it around the final corner, starting a hot lap, not even on a hot lap, which sounds very Formula One game and me. That's the kind of relationship I have. But yeah, that's my thoughts on it.
Yeah, that's me on my short little iRacing career that
which I keep telling you to get back on.
I know.
I'm moving house.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, iRacing, you kind of go out the pits, you don't warm your tyres up, and then you realise it's a realistic sim and plant the throttle and you spin off. And that's what Hamilton did.
He did blame on cold tyres, didn't he?
He did. I wonder how much effectively, you know, DAS not being there, maybe. They just seem to struggle. And this is the thing with sandbagging versus struggle. We've had Mercedes before where they don't set the best lap time. That's fine. But we still know they're going to be at the front. This is genuine because you can just see, like, they'd have nothing to gain from spinning off, beaching it in the gravel. You know, Hamilton beached it in the gravel and everyone, one of the things they didn't want everyone to see was the floor. And then obviously Hamilton beached it in the gravel. They have to put it on the back of a truck. And I'm sure Red Bull, Ferrari, everyone else saw their competitors got to see a nice look at their floor. So yeah, it's one of those things where they're not sandbagging. Don't get me wrong. I'm not believing for a second that they're going to be in the midfield. We definitely know that for a fact, but clearly that car has setup issues.
It's a really bizarre place to be, isn't it? Because, like you say, we're used to Mercedes not topping every single session in pre-season testing, but this almost seems a step too far. Mercedes come into F1 every year and Toto Wolff is very, like, keeps his cards to his chest and says, you know, this could be the year that we don't do as well as we normally do. And then they absolutely ace it and everybody's like, come on, mate, you know, we know you're going to absolutely smash it every year on year. But for this season, it was just, it's so un-Mercedes-like for them to have such an amateurish few days of testing. Obviously, Lewis...
Katie firing already, amateurish, yeah. Straight out the blocks.
But it's not like Lewis. Lewis doesn't want to look like an idiot, but the way that the car was handling made him look like he had no clue what he was doing. And I mean, Mercedes are the only team to have not done a pre-season. I can see you laughing. Mercedes were the only team not to do a pre-test shakedown. So it could have been that they weren't able to iron out any of the imperfections that they did have. But still, it's just really strange for Mercedes, and naturally is going to be a huge talking point, which is why we're all talking about it.
Exactly. Toto Wolff did shrug off the fact that they didn't do a shakedown as not the reason why they had the gearbox issues and whatever else were kind of looming over them over the 3 days. They were the team to complete the least laps of everybody, which is that's the thing that really I'm dialing into there. That's what I'm focusing in on, because of course times we don't know who's running what. You don't know if Yuki Tsunoda's running DRS the entire lap and things like that.
You mean he's not going to be world champion?
We'll get on to him, but generally speaking, Mercedes, I think last year especially, they were top of the mileage, or at least they were right at the top, because they were showing the consistency, they were showing the bulletproof the creation of their car is usually, I think the last time Hamilton conked out of a race was 2018 Australia or something. I remember seeing all kinds of stats flying up on screen during testing. But yeah, it's just, it's uncharacteristic for Mercedes to show a few vulnerabilities before a season starts. And of course, we're jumping on it. I've already said that Hamilton's probably going to get pole by 7/10 and, run away with it when we get to round one. But right now, I have a glimmer of hope, which usually I don't have. And of course, Mercedes have come out and said they're not the fastest car. Red Bull at the quickest. They're not fastest around one lap and blah, 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 blah. We'll take that with a pinch of salt or sand.
Terrible. What you did there.
So that's an interesting question. Let's move on to another one. Ruben GNW asks, I know it's the question which is being asked most, but can we expect Red Bull to start ahead of Mercedes in 2021? Even ignoring lap times, the Mercedes looked really unstable and the drivers were struggling, where Max and Checo both looked very comfy and the car looked great. The Red Bull did look a lot more stable, which is what we've looked at when you watch testing. I think there's a high likelihood that Red Bull could challenge Mercedes into Bahrain. When you look at Abu Dhabi, Max outqualified the Mercedes on pure pace and pure performance. There wasn't any other variables there, really. So Red Bull finished the year strong. And going into this year, where there aren't a huge amount of technical changes, there are a few on the rear side of the car, stripping back the aero of that side, I think, isn't it?
The floor aero.
So there are still changes. And Mercedes have gone for like a very wavy sort of floor design. And, I remember Toto Wolff in his interview didn't really understand what Rosanna Tennant was saying when she was saying like it's like a ripple effect. And he's like, oh, what? there clearly are still changes. And Mercedes look a little bit like they're not completely happy with how it's all gone. And 3 days of testing doesn't give them a lot of time to fix things either.
Yeah, it couldn't have been better timing for hype building, I guess. And especially our watch along that Hamilton had that spin. I think all of us were kind of thinking, he's had these spins. I'm sure on the final lap, suddenly the car will look amazing and he's going to be, setting an unbelievable lap time and we'll all be like, okay, there's the Mercedes. But still on his final few laps, just before, pretty much the end of testing, like we said, it's only a short amount of time. And Lewis Hamilton is, we said it on the watch along, didn't we, correcting his car more in a single lap than he probably did for the entirety of last season, because that Mercedes, you were used to just watching those qualifying laps, they're absolutely on rails, you turn in, the car sticks, never has to make any kind of correction. And Hamilton, like, that car looked an absolute handful. And again, to go back to the previous question, that is not sandbagging. They have nothing to gain from essentially doing that. So it's very interesting to see how it's going to be. There is hope, people. There's hope.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of people online, aren't there? They're saying, oh, well, Mercedes, they could be keeping their cards close to their chest, but why would you want to make yourself...
Another form of sandbagging, basically.
Yeah, but like, why would you want to make yourself look so like you've had such a fallback? I don't understand it. They didn't come across at all well. Like you say, least amount of laps done. They didn't really, Lewis Hamilton didn't exactly set the world alight on the final third day with his times. I mean, people like Kimi Raikkonen did a quicker time than him on the same compound of tyres. Obviously, track conditions change, but it's a weird one. But in terms of answering this question with Red Bull, I mean, Red Bull were quickest overall. Verstappen set a 128.96 on the third day with compound four tyres. the car responded really well to all the setup changes. Plus, Red Bull have the strongest driver lineup in years, in my opinion. You've got Max, who we all know is absolute feisty driver. He's excellent, future world champion, no doubt. And Sergio Perez, who's also mega experienced. Obviously, he's now a race winner, and he's going to be wanting to prove to people that he is the driver that he know he has been for a long time, but just maybe hasn't had the cars to prove it. So with all the experience and the great drivers and that Honda power unit looking strong, I think we've got our best chance in a few years for Red Bull to really take it to Mercedes.
And as Tommy said, you would just get into regulation changes and we seem to have potentially a close championship fight. You know,
that would just be typical, wouldn't it? That
we'll wait for round one to really make a full judgment on whether
we don't know, obviously. Again, it's all speculation, but it really is Red Bull. There's no question that Red Bull have started stronger than they've done in ages, and Red Bull, like you mentioned, even people that play their cards close to their chest, like you say, Helmut Marko said this is the best start we've ever had as an F1
Piling
team
on
testing.
The pressure.
So maybe they're going for the whole mind games approach and just saying, yeah, we are amazing. Try and beat us, Mac.
Yes, please.
Big brain power.
Yes, yeah. Please, indeed.
Yes, please.
We interrupt this WTF1 podcast for a very quick chat about one of our sponsors for this episode, LinkedIn Jobs. If you own a business, big or small, then listen up. 2021 is looking up, which means there should be plenty of new opportunities for you to grow your business. Whether you're shifting business hours or hiring more remote employees, one thing that remains unchanged is the importance of having the right people on your team. When you're ready to make that next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. And to lend a helping hand, your first job post is free. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with more than 30 million members in the UK. So when your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. And now you can post a job for free. Just visit linkedin.com/WTF1. Again, that's linkedin.com/WTF1 to post a job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Moving on. Vettel Laporte as a motorbike goes flying past my
That was
my
not
house.
Vettel.
We might finally be seeing Lewis in an unstable, unpredictable car. Undoubtedly a GOAT-tier driver, but might we see him struggling in a similar fashion to Seb? 2018, 2019 spins, not quite 2020 level when the Ferrari became unstable. Now, I'm not going to start bashing Vettel here, but in my opinion, Hamilton is a level above Vettel as a driver and his adaptability. He's proved that. He's won in every single season he's ever raced in, and that's a lot of different technical regulations. Vettel, of course, it was incredible in the Red Bull, and it's clear that he's great when the car suits him. Hamilton, of course, you know, he's had years where he struggled. The early years at McLaren, of course, you know, the first couple of years were great, but then it did tail off, and he did have a bad car. It's not like he's never driven a bad car before. So I don't see a fall off. I feel like he would have less patience with the media, and we might see the sassy side of Hamilton because he's so used to winning, so used to being on the podium. If that then just fell away, I can't imagine he'd want to end his career, which is, you know, undoubtedly coming up at some point, on a low. So I don't think we'll see much of a fall off personally. I think he'll still get the most out of the car, and it'll just be really interesting to see, you know, how his racecraft is after being out in front for so long and not really having to deal with much but backmarkers.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much of the interviews of, oh, come on, we need people to be fighting at the front, and how exciting it would be if Red Bull catch up, that if they are a little bit behind, whether he'll still be so like, yeah, it's great. But back to the whole like Vettel thing, I can't see, while we're thinking the Mercedes is a bit of a struggle, I can't see there being, you know, Lewis Hamilton Spinala memes for a whole year and him spinning off constantly. I just cannot see that happening. I think Mercedes will sort their issues out, and agree, Hamilton's more of an adaptable driver. But if they don't sort their issues out, and you do get four or five races before they kind of get this issue sorted and they kind of find the sweet spot with their car, it's going to be great to see. This is what people want to see. You want to see Hamilton fighting with Verstappen and having to do a lot more than just winning from pole. I know, of course, he has proved it in the past, but this is, you know, what everyone I'm sure wants to see. So yeah, bring it on.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I think with Sebastian, obviously, we know that he's a four-time world champion. He's obviously not a shoddy driver, is he, if he's got that many world championships? And when that's partnered with a car that just isn't responding in the ways you want it to, you're going to struggle. But for Lewis, I'd like to think that, although it's a possibility that he might have a bit of a wobbly year, hopefully he's the kind of driver that would actually enjoy having those battles with the Red Bulls, with the McLarens, if they continue with the pace they've got, rather than just thinking, oh, I wish I was all on my own, 30 seconds ahead of the whole field, just tootling around with no one to fight with. I'd like to think that he'd be wanting to bring out that fighter instinct that he's got, because we've seen from old interviews and stuff how amazing he was fighting up the fields when he was in junior series. And yeah, I'd like to think that maybe he's missed a little bit of that when we saw Hamilton and Vettel having a bit of a battle in, I think it was Turkey last year. Both of those drivers absolutely loved it. So although maybe Lewis might get a bit tired of having to fight for wins and stuff, if it's over a 23 race calendar, maybe if the car is, you know, struggling like we've seen in pre-season testing, then he might enjoy that. But I'm not sure. Like you say, we'll probably get to Bahrain and it'll be a Mercedes one too, and we'll just laugh at all these conversations that we had.
But we have to have them. We have to have them purely because there is a glimmer of hope. And I think, you know, Hamilton has said in, you know, media interviews many times that he relishes the fight and he'd love to see the Red Bulls and the Ferraris up there. And I genuinely do believe him, because I think in, you know, in 2019, for example, when he was fighting Vettel and, you know, the Ferrari was strong, I feel like he did enjoy that battle. So I don't think he's really, you know, blowing smoke up our ass. I don't think that's the correct term, but you know, he's not kind of just lying to us in the sense of, you know, I think he does enjoy that more than just tootling out in front, you know, and fighting Bottas for a win. Oh no, Bottas is locked up. Oh, I got another win. You know, so, you know, they're all racers and they want that competition. And I think Hamilton himself, you know, he's in this prime position now where, you know, he thinks he's in the best form of his life, right? He thinks he can still keep going and he's got all the experience under on his shoulders. So I don't know. I think it would be really interesting if just the Red Bulls are on a similar pace to Mercedes. I think we could have an awesome, awesome fight. You've got Perez, who is looking to really prove himself. This is his only opportunity, really, to potentially win a world title, because you never know what Red Bull, you know, and behind closed doors, what they're thinking. You know, Alex Albon in this development role, and is he going to have a year and then they go back to him? You know, it's going to have to be a huge season from Perez. Verstappen, of course, he will literally chomp on an opportunity to be anywhere near a world title challenge. And then Bottas, I mean, he's got
some mind games.
He's got a plan. He's naked in a spa saying he's gonna win again. BTS spoilers, by the way.
Give a bit of context to that.
Yeah, no, that sounds a bit odd, doesn't it? But that's Drive to Survive season 3. You'll understand it when you see it on the 19th. But yeah, it's going to be awesome. I hope it's going to be awesome. Fingers crossed. I feel like I've just jinxed it and Mercedes will win earlier than they've ever done. Moving on. Harry Oliver 07. How much do you think Ferrari have recovered this season? Do you think they challenge Merck and Red Bull or still be in around the midfield? No, they're not going to challenge Mercedes and Red Bull. I think that's pretty clear to see. I think they would have any kind... I don't think they could have gone any further backwards if they tried. You know, they were slower than Alfa Romeo for half of the season last year. So it's difficult. They didn't set the test alight. I felt like they were just kind of in the midfield and just chilling, and they had an okay test and not a huge amount of things went wrong. And we've got Sainz, who nearly exploded into Kimi Raikkonen at the end of the test, which was a very odd thing. But he was on a flying lap, I believe, and that's why he sent it on Kimi.
They're already practicing racing the Alphas.
Yeah, literally. But no, I don't see Ferrari being anywhere near Mercedes and Red Bull, and I think they'd be lucky to finish third or fourth in the championship.
Oh, absolutely. We've said it before that Ferrari, if they don't have a great season, it's not actually too bad. Not that they would sandbag, but obviously we know that they get more time in the wind tunnel and all that kind of stuff if they do worse. But I can't see them improving. You know, they've said the engine is better, which is kind of like Williams going, we're better. But yeah, the Ferrari engine apparently is a lot better, but I can't see them being yeah, for I'd completely rule out them being anywhere near Mercedes and Red Bull unless they have done the greatest sandbag, and it was them that were sandbagging all along. Like, surprise!
Unless they have another sealed envelope of doom, have a year of just having an overpowered engine, and
yeah, exactly. But no, I think they've got a real fight on with McLaren, AlphaTauri, Alpine, and yeah, Aston. So it could be that midfield battle looks so close. It really could be a case where Ferrari, you know, finishing seventh in the championship, which is pretty appalling, really, isn't it?
Oh, imagine the scenes. I think you couldn't get worse than sixth in the championship, but here we are. No, but it just proves how unrealistic the pre-season test times are, because Ferrari were apparently third quickest with a 129.6. So the only two that quicker were Red Bull and AlphaTauri. And they also did the third, well, second, but there were two teams that did the joint most laps, and then it was Ferrari with 404 laps. So, you know, they've got a nice consistent car, and like Tommy said, the power...
404 memes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 404.
Error 404.
But yeah, the power unit's definitely got a lot more oomph than it has previously, and that's a technical term, oomph. But they've made changes to the rear as well, trying to get back any lost downforce. But unfortunately, my view is that they're still going to be midfield. Hopefully, they'll finish higher than sixth, but we'll go into it a bit more later. But I think there's going to be quite a juicy battle for midfield this year, and Ferrari have really got to up their game, because there are some pretty competitive people that are going to be fighting them in the midfield. So let's just
midfield
hope
battle being juicy. That's every year, isn't it? It's just
better this year.
Formula 1.5.
yeah.
Moving on, unless you had anything else to say, Tommy. You look like you were ready to jump in.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, F1.5 looks like it's going to continue and be even better.
Exciting. Devolia ESP asks, how alarming is the situation at Aston? Everyone talks about the Merc, but the Aston situation seems way worse. Obviously, they didn't set any sort of representative lap time on the last day, which is usually the day where everyone turns up the wick a little bit. You know, we see the fastest times on the final day. And yet they were plumb last, weren't they? Stroll and Vettel. There was no real... well, you can't say qualifying runs, but, you know, faster runs from them. Of course, they still put mileage on the clock. They still were not last like Mercedes, but there wasn't a huge amount more mileage. I don't know if anyone has the laps to hand, but I don't think it was many more laps at all.
314 laps for Aston Martin and 304 for Mercedes.
Yeah, so 10 more laps. 10. Not a huge amount. And yeah, it did look a little bit concerning. And there has been talk as well around Aston Martin and the fact that they were able to change quite a few more things under the development token thing, which will be, they're releasing a video very soon about the development tokens and stuff. But Aston Martin have been able to essentially change the rear of their car for free because of the fact that they were just upgrading parts from 2019 to 2020. It's very complicated, but we'll simplify it down for a video coming out at the end of the week, hopefully. But it's interesting that Aston have somehow found this loophole, as some teams were saying, of getting free upgrades on their car, and yet they look one of the worst teams in testing.
Yeah, I mean, they had the pink Mercedes last year, as it was pink Mercedes klaxon going off, but their car this year is not a Mercedes replica like it was last year. They've changed a lot. It is noticeably different, but it just doesn't look particularly great. They just seemed a bit meh is the probably the technical explanation for Aston Martin's test.
So we've had meh. Oomph and we've got meh.
They just they
only
just
the
didn't...
best insight at WTF1.
They just didn't seem to, especially after I think it was the last podcast, we had questions like, Aston Martin look really good, don't they? And we said, well, we've not seen them in testing yet. Are you just believing this Lawrence Stroll hype that they've
Aston Martin looked good at their livery launch, where
they've got James Bond, and they've proper gone ham on the whole, like, we're Aston Martin, we're going to be this amazing super team and challenge everyone. And then it seems like they've got to testing, and it's a bit like, oh yeah, F1's difficult. So they didn't set many laps. They had mechanical failures. They didn't, like I say, didn't do a fast run. So it's very hard to tell, but it's not looking great for them. To think that at the end of the year, they got a victory under Racing Point, and I'm still adamant, despite them not finishing third, they did have the third best car last season. So, yeah, not the greatest start for the new team name, at least.
There's a lot of excitement, obviously, to do with Aston Martin, but it's more than just a name change above the top of the door. Like Matt said, there are lots of different things that have gone into making this car, hopefully, a better version of the 2019 Racing Point that we saw. But like Tommy was saying, there were so many issues. We had electrical glitches, we had gearbox problems, they had a loss of boost pressure, which affected Sebastian Vettel on the last day. And although lots of these things could be put down as sort of teething issues, they're not a completely new team that have just rocked up. Like, a lot of the team personnel are the same, and engineers and mechanics in the garage. So there's still hope that it could get sorted, hopefully relatively quickly, and they can be up in the upper midfield again. But yeah, there's quite a lot of variables. And I mean, Vettel just had an absolute shocking test, although he's being very optimistic and says he's still got a lot to learn and he's just still getting to know the car. He set 117 laps over the three-day test, which is the least of everyone apart from Roy Nassani, who was in the Williams for one day, and he's their test driver. So really not a great start for Vettel, but we can hope that they put their ducks in a row, another technical term, and they can get themselves sorted, ready for the first race in Bahrain.
Vettel finally gets the Mercedes power unit and then has a boost issue. Poor guy. It's like, yes, I've not got the Ferrari power unit anymore. And then that comes up on the dash. You have no power. Oh, wonderful.
He's used to a terrible car.
God, shots being fired always from Casey Fairman. Also, very quickly, Tommy was right. The car, no way, is the best looking car out there on the track. Not a chance. Unless there's someone, unless they have like a lighting crew going round with the car at all times.
And an Instagram filter. Yeah.
No one can tell us that looks like the best car on the grid now when it's actually out there on the track. No way. Alpine smashing it.
We interrupt this WTF1 podcast for a very quick chat about our final sponsor of this episode, ExpressVPN. When you use the bathroom, you always close the door behind you, right? You don't want random passerbys to look in on you. So why would you let people look in on you when you go online? Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like going to the bathroom and not closing the door. Did you know that your internet service provider knows every single website you visit? And what's worse is they can sell this information to ad companies and tech giants who will use your data to target you. ExpressVPN puts a stop to this. It creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet so that your online activity can't be seen by anyone. I use ExpressVPN on all my devices. It works on everything, phones, laptops, anything you can think of. So everyone who shares your Wi-Fi can still be protected, even if they don't have ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is the world's number one rated VPN by CNET, Wired, The Verge, and countless others. So if you're like me and believe your online activity is your business, secure yourself by visiting expressvpn.com/WTF1 today. Use our exclusive link expressvpn.com/WTF1 and you can get an extra 3 months free. That's expressvpn.com/WTF1. Right, back to the podcast.
Kieran W1014, do you think that the midfield order will see much change? While it is just testing, have to remember that. AlphaTauri looked better than I ever expected, and Alfa Romeo looked like they could be much closer to the midfield pack with the improved Ferrari PU power unit. Again, it is just testing, and we have to go off the mileage and things like that. And I think AlphaTauri, especially with Yuki Tsunoda, and of course, you know, there were things about him using DRS too early and gaining a bit of time here and there, but it's not like he gained 2 seconds by using DRS. And generally, I think that's a really exciting lineup, not just the car, but Tsunoda, who, you know, I was a little bit like, you know, will it take him a bit of time? And, you know, he was great in F2, but he wasn't the best in F2. He didn't win the championship.
He was the best in F2.
Tommy's going to be raging at
that. I'm just trying to trick you. But you know, coming back round so Tommy doesn't kill me, I think, you know, he did look really comfortable and really confident in the car. And I feel like Gasly will have a job on his hands to keep Tsunoda at bay. I still think Gasly will beat Tsunoda over the course of a season. So, you know, I've got to stick with my guns on that one. But in terms of midfield order changing, it's so difficult to say. You know, there's speculation and then there's, you know, where does the midfield stack up? Yeah, I think AlphaTauri definitely looking strong, and Alfa Romeo could easily still be ahead of Ferrari. I say still. That's such a weird thing to say, that they were kind of better than Ferrari for a lot of last year.
Yeah, I think other than Mercedes being poor, I think AlphaTauri were maybe one of the surprises of the test, really, because, again, lap times, we don't go into it, however much I would love a title fight between Max Verstappen and Yuki Tsunoda. It's probably not going to happen. But the AlphaTauri looked absolutely planted. Like, if you watch, I think F1 shared a video with Verstappen and they compared the two laps and the cars looked identical. There's a lot of talk that they are identical. The AlphaTauri have gone for the Red Bull front wing and front nose and stuff now, changed their car a bit, and it is pretty much, maybe less controversially, but they're similar to Racing Point. They are running a 2020 Red Bull pretty much, so they look very quick. I wouldn't be surprised if they were quicker than Aston Martin. They look like the biggest surprise. I wouldn't put it against AlphaTauri maybe being best of the rest with McLaren, those two fighting for best of the rest, which would be a big surprise. I don't think anyone really expected AlphaTauri of all teams. There was a lot of hype for Aston Martin, wasn't there, and whether Ferrari would come back. And then if out of nowhere AlphaTauri end up really good, and what we saw with the Honda power unit, it'll probably break down every race now I've said this, but
yeah, watch this. Tsunoda out in Q1. Yeah, heard it here first.
Now I've said this, but I think if a lot of people would have bet maybe the Red Bull and the AlphaTauri and the Honda engine be the one that's having the failures and the problems, but they just seem to be able to just do lap after lap without issues, which was amazing to see.
They were so consistent during pre-season testing. I mean, Gasly was just setting almost identical lap time after lap time. And obviously everybody was super hyped when Tsunoda put in that absolute sensational lap, although it was probably quite influenced by the fact that he had his DRS flap open for...
And C5 tyres. I mean, I think sensational's a bit strong. Tommy would probably use it. But...
Yeah. Part of the,
the lap of the gods.
Yeah, but I think we're definitely going to see a much closer midfield this year. I think Red Bull, Mercedes and McLaren, they're probably going to be the top three. And Haas and Williams, I think, are just going to be at the back. But everyone else in between, Alpine, AlphaTauri, Alfa Romeo, Aston Martin, Ferrari, all in that midfield battle. And I think it's going to get spicy.
What? Spicy. Going back to the Honda engine very quickly. And it's a big if, they have absolutely nailed it like we think, and maybe, you know, Red Bull are the best team, AlphaTauri are best of the rest. How very Honda that they leave the sport just as they're on the verge of greatness. It would just be so... like, they did that last time, didn't they, with Braun? Like, come on, guys.
So true.
Stick it out.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on, next question. Bartlett, 8166. What's your opinion on Williams giving a whole day of testing to Nissani? Seems like a bit of a cash grab to me and could end up hurting Russell and Latifi. Yeah, I think we mentioned it in the watch along, I think it was, Tommy, when we were watching the final hour of testing. It just, it's 100% a cash grab. There is no benefit to Roy Nissani plonking himself into that car for an entire day in the Williams for day one of testing of a 3-day test. It's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. But that's, you know, that's clearly they need the money, and it would have been a serious Wonga check for Roy Nissani to be in the first day of testing and have the whole day. It was the whole day, wasn't it, to himself?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there wasn't a huge amount of laps either. It was like 86, and probably his neck fell off because he hasn't driven an F1 car in ages. But, you know, there was no benefit to that. Of course, they get a bit of data, but it's neither of their two drivers going into the season. The feedback probably wasn't particularly high quality either, just purely because Nissani doesn't drive the Formula 1 car often.
He doesn't have a super license, does he? Because didn't he have the green light on the back of his car, which means you don't have a super license or enough super license points, I believe.
I don't know.
So
that.
I don't think he's even got a super
license. Okay, so it was illegal for him to drive. Is that what you're saying, Tommy?
No.
He just drove around.
Just saying for people that maybe don't know about F2, like, you know, he's not a seasoned veteran, shall we say. It is very much like yeah, not the person you'd expect to be driving, but money.
It is. I do feel bad for Williams because obviously torn between needing serious cash injection and then getting their actual drivers in the car for good feedback, which if they do that properly will then lead to more money further down the line if the car's good and they can get championship points. But I guess for the, they came to the decision that they needed that money now, and so yeah, they put Nissani in the car. But
they've just written it off, haven't they? They've just, they're clearly not going into 21 thinking we're going to score points. You know, as long as they beat Haas, who have just literally just gone, here's our car, there's a few more pointy bits to kind of go with the regulations, and that's all they've changed. So I think they're hoping that they'll beat Haas, and then, you know, if for whatever reason a ridiculous turkey race happens, they can potentially steal a point. But yeah, it's clearly just something that they've just prioritized getting some money, and it doesn't really matter too much. So it's going to be interesting.
Sorry, what are you going to say, Tommy?
I said it on the watch along that Williams are one of those old school teams. Obviously, Frank and Claire are no longer sort of involved that side, but they're very much that old school team. You know, we saw it in, I want to say season one of Drive to Survive. Can't remember season one or season two, where it's the Williams episode. And
yeah,
you know, they're
one,
building all the parts themselves, aren't they? Getting, which is a struggle for
the brilliant scene of, where's the front wing? Oh,
yeah, exactly.
Somewhere.
And Williams always wanted, kind of, they're still, you could either say they're doing Formula One properly, or you could say they're maybe living in the past a bit, when you see someone like Racing Point with, you know, storming to a race win because they've essentially just copied the Mercedes. So maybe this is a change of Williams that just say, look, we need to do these things now. We need money coming in to have a better future. And maybe while it's not a popular thing, and no doubt there'll be some people not happy and maybe feel a little bit disappointed by it, you've got to do what you've got to do in F1 to survive, I guess.
You do.
And move up the order. And maybe this is what they need to move up the order, more money, and then they can do this now while they're at the back, get more money in, and then they'll be laughing, hopefully.
Like you say, money talks. But in terms of the Williams, Russell said that the car was very wind sensitive, which is a not a great start. But apparently there are some items promised for FP1 in Bahrain, so hopefully they'll have
wheels.
Some upgrades. Well, you'd like to think.
Some fresh wheels.
Yeah, I've heard that twice from two different people. I was speaking to Sam Collins on a podcast, who's the F1 tech guy. And he was saying that Williams have built an unusual car that might be really quick in some races when the conditions are just absolutely perfect. Like, do you remember, was it Haas maybe last 2 years ago,
Austria,
when Magnussen would just bang it in P5 and you're like, oh, well, that's amazing. And then it would get to Q2, the wind changes by 1 mile an hour and he's 19th and you're like, what? So, yeah. It sounds like the Williams.
That's
is like
impressive
that.
To finish 19th in Q2.
I was
Tommy,
thinking that. As soon as you said that, I was like, that doesn't make sense, does it? All the comments going off now. But you say, so maybe perfect conditions, they might be up there. They're 1.5 seconds quicker than their qualifying lap in testing.
But hey, there's a lot of different variables, different tire compounds, a lot more available.
We'll see. Oh, apparently, the car is very strange and obliterating for us car as well.
I can't wait to see that. Okay, moving on. Walker S1096 says, who finishes the season high? I love how the last three people have all had four numbers at the end of their name. They're not like burner accounts.
They're
not just sending their own questions.
They're PIN numbers.
Who finishes the season higher, Williams or Haas? Williams rebuilding versus Haas writing off the year. It's going to be between two dustbins, for me. It's just going to be, I love that gif so much, the two dustbins going down the road when it's flooded. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. Just type in rubbish bins or something as a gif. Anyway, I think it's going to be those two. I think Williams will actually be ahead of Haas this year. I think they've clearly taken a step forward than Haas have. And again, it will be for 9th and 10th. But I see Williams being ahead.
Yeah, me too. They've looked like they're yeah, going forwards, whereas Haas
and especially have two rookies as well.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. That you've got to think that if Haas struggled with development with experienced drivers of Grosjean and Magnussen, and then putting two F2 rookies in the car, probably things aren't going to go much better, you'd think. But again, money talks. I would say Williams.
We keep saying
well.
Episode one of Drive to Survive season three over and over, don't we?
Ash is king. Yeah, it's true. I'm also in agreement with you too. I think Williams will be higher. They've got the more experienced and more reliable drivers of Russell and Latifi. Like you say, Haas have completely rookie lineup, which isn't always all bad. Look at Toro Rosso in 2015. They had these two unknown drivers, Carlos Sainz and Max Verstappen. There's a rookie lineup. No, I don't know what happened to them. No. But Williams are looking to be quick in what they've called the neutral conditions. So like Tommy says, when it has to be absolutely perfect. But I think with a Ferrari power unit in the back of the Haas and the fact they've got rookie drivers and literally just done a copy and paste on last year's car, I can't see them setting the world on fire.
Podium round one. Here we go.
Yeah, damn it.
Haas world champions confirmed.
Yeah, confirmed.
Okay, next question. Guru Goodley. From testing, who do you, all three, I love how you put that in the question, not Thanks. Just who do I, everyone, think will be the dark horse of the season, Alpine or AlphaTauri? I think we've already kind of mentioned that AlphaTauri look to be the ones that have maybe taken a step forward. Again, it's all speculation and we're just going off Yuki Tsunoda using DRS the entire lap. But, you know, Gasly, as Katie mentioned, put in a really good race stint of just looking very strong in terms of his consistency at the very least, and was quicker than what Charles Leclerc's race run was at least, although, of course, we don't know exactly what power modes and so on, but looked good. And we can sort of take that. Alpine did look good as well, though. And Alonso up to speed very quickly, which was a slight surprise. But then, of course, it's Fernando Alonso. And Tommy will say, it wasn't a surprise. I always expected this.
But don't write off Fernando.
Exactly. You can't write off Fernando. And it's great to have him back in the sport. I've kind of gone from, it would have been nice to see a rookie, of course. But now I'm like, it's Fernando Alonso. It's a good thing to have someone that you know will get the absolute maximum out of this car. Back on the grid, and of course he's a world champion as well, so I think the dark horse will be AlphaTauri, but I think Alpine will have some good races as well over the season.
Guess AlphaTauri again are the dark horse, but I just realized we've not really spoken that much about McLaren, who maybe it's just because
you can't
everyone
call them dark horses.
No, that's what I mean, like everyone kind of expects them, but at the same time I cannot believe, you know, you're on this podcast saying that you reckon McLaren are going to be really good. And I will be the first to admit that I was kind of like, well, no, they need to get up to speed with a new engine. And they've just come straight out the blocks. They were straight on it. And they've got this kind of
Danny Rick,
maybe
looking good,
Danny Rick looking really good. They've not had any issues, which if you remember when they were with Honda, was an absolute nightmare, them trying to get that new engine in the car. And it just seems like they've just got it sorted straight away. They've got this maybe illegal, maybe amazing diffuser that apparently now every team is going to want to copy. McLaren looking really good, but then I guess you can't really call them a dark horse because they were third in the championship last year. So I think if we're going biggest surprise, AlphaTauri.
Yeah, I've said AlphaTauri over Alpine as well, because that Honda power unit just looks so immense, which it could just be chance that they've done really well in pre-season testing, and then when we get to the first few races we have the same issues of the power unit failing or blowing up or whatever. But I think AlphaTauri certainly look like they could be the dark horse of the season, which I would love to see.
Well, we've successfully collected our jinxing powers and put it all into AlphaTauri now, so they're going to be absolute trash coming into this season. So you can blame us when they're out in Q1 and have a dreadful season. That's pretty much it for the testing podcast. Tommy, final thoughts?
Let's hope we have a close season.
At least you didn't say, no, I don't have final thoughts.
Yeah, I don't have any. No, we just... Yeah, people will maybe say we're stupid for believing this.
People call us a lot worse than stupid. So
that's very true. But come on, it's nice. Even me as the most pessimistic person, I've got a little bit of optimism that at least at the start of the season, it might be pretty close. And wouldn't it be amazing to have a, you know, I'm sure regardless of who you support, no one will be upset with a Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton title fight going down to the final race. That would be incredible.
Bottas triggered. Katie, what's your final thoughts?
My final thoughts isn't anything particularly relating to testing, but I just wanted to pay my respects to Murray Walker, who passed away at the weekend. I mean, I'm sure both of you guys, you're a little bit older than me, so you've probably grown up listening to him actually do his commentary. He had retired by the time I sort of was young enough to understand what was going in Formula One, but his voice is definitely the reason that I think a lot of people are so in love with Formula One. And it was a huge loss to the motorsport community. And I just wanted to pay my respects to him for my final thoughts.
Lovely stuff, Katie. Yeah, myself and Tommy, we did a little piece, didn't we, on our watch along. Of course, not everybody would have watched that. But to echo Katie's thoughts, it was really sad to see Murray Walker passed away, but at the same time it was more of a celebration because I mean it was 97. I mean, what an innings that is from the man that changed Formula One for so many. You know, his voice just resonates with it, pretty much everyone that's ever watched the sport. And I've put a tweet out saying that I'd love for something to be, I'm sure there will be something made specific to him, whether it's a corner or an area or whatever, the media center someone mentioned. Murray was and will probably be the best ever, at least motorsports broadcaster ever, if not best sports commentator. You know, the passion and the energy and the emotion he put into everything was such an awesome thing to hear. And of course, he has had his mistakes, but that just warmed us even more to him. It was really sad to see Murray pass away. But at the same time, I feel blessed to have had him as someone that, you know, we could listen to for so, so many years.
Yeah, an amazing part of, like you say, he was my childhood growing up listening to Formula One, and I genuinely don't think I'd love Formula One as much without him, because he just had an amazing way of just, especially, what would I have been, 8 years old when I started watching Formula One, having someone like that screaming at every single incident. Even I put on an old race, like some highlights and stuff, just to like remember some of his great commentary. And I was watching this old race, and I think it was Schumacher was catching Frentzen, and the gap was 4 seconds going into the final lap. And any other commentator would just be like, "Well, this race is done." And I think Schumacher took half a second out, and Murray Walker was going absolutely ballistic, like Schumacher was going to win the race. And there was not really any chance that Schumacher was going to win the race, but he just made everything amazing and exciting. And I think part of that is just why we love Formula One today.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Well, there you go. That's a lovely little tribute to Murray Walker. Our best wishes go out to his friends and family, of course. And that's pretty much it. So thanks so much for watching and listening this WTF1 podcast on testing. Make sure to use the hashtag WTF1 podcast if you want to get involved in the conversation. We, of course, put stuff on social media as well on WTF1 official if you ever want to ask any questions and be involved in this podcast. And also a quick thanks to our sponsors, LinkedIn Talent Solutions and ExpressVPN. And that's pretty much it. Thank you so much for watching, listening, wherever you are. 5 stars, thumbs up. You know the drill. And we'll see you for another podcast very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.